Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to All Exits Closed. I'm Cynthia Pooler. My guest today is Scott Ritter, and Scott is going to talk about Colin Powell and his speech before the UN. So at that point, when he did that, you were still a weapons inspector, right, Scott?
No, I resigned in 1998, so I the speech was given in 2003, so I was, about 4.5 years removed from my job as a weapons inspector.
So when Colin Powell went before the UN and talked about WMD, what was your reaction?
Well, let's keep in mind a couple of things. One, I recognize that, my expiration date, so to speak, when it comes to having the access to the best intelligence, it expired in August of 1998 when I left the United Nations. And so when Colin Powell stands before the Security Council in February of 2003, one could say that he would be in a position to know better than me. In fact, Colin Powell and I had this, hashed this issue out in September of 2002 when I challenged the U.S. government and said, what I said in September 2002 was, when I resigned, Iraq did not have the capabilities the U.S. government was claiming it had. And I had access to all of the intelligence at that time. So if the U.S. government is going to claim that Iraq has this new capability, they need to explain how they know this. What is their new source of information? Because the CIA was admitting behind closed doors that once the UN inspectors left Iraq, there was no new source of information. They had nothing. They were blind. So if that's the case, how can you say in 2002 that you have this new information, that you have drawn these new conclusions? And, Colin Powell, basically said, well, Scott doesn't have access to the intelligence that I have. But the point is, Colin Powell didn't have access to any intelligence. Anything new, the CIA didn't have anything new. The CIA has acknowledged since this time that they didn't have any new information. This was simply a reinterpretation of the information that I had access to back in August of 1998. And that reinterpretation wasn't, based upon, any new insight. It was a reinterpretation based upon the political pressure placed on the CIA by the Bush administration, George W. Bush, to fix the intelligence to the political decision to invade, meaning that the conclusion had already been reached that we're going to invade, we're going to use weapons of mass destruction as the excuse, so now we need to get the intelligence that supports there being weapons of mass destruction so we can invade. That's not how it works, but that's how it was done, and everybody knew it. I mean, this wasn't a secret. This was well known to everybody, including Colin Powell, who at the time was Secretary of State. A lot of people need to understand this. Colin Powell wasn't just Secretary of State. Now, that alone means something. I mean, he's one of the top four national security and foreign policy powers in the United States. The president, the vice president, the secretary of state, the secretary of defense. These are the big wigs. You can throw in the national security advisor if you want to. You can throw in the chairman of the joint chiefs of staff. And the reason why I say those two is because Colin Powell, before being secretary of state, used to be the chairman of the joint chiefs of staff. He ran the whole military, every aspect of it. And before that, he was the national security advisor, which means that he coordinated policy between all of the other agencies, including the CIA. Colin Powell knows every aspect of how the U.S. government works, how information is processed, what it takes to get data from the CIA into a speech to be presented on a public forum that the whole world is going to be watching. This wasn't some new exercise to him. This wasn't something where he went, oh, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm unfamiliar with this. People took advantage of me. No. Colin Powell was the single most experienced individual in government at the time. He could not have been taken advantage of. He was the man who knew everything. Colin Powell willingly went before the Security Council of the United Nations and presented a presentation based upon fundamentally flawed assumptions derived from manufactured intelligence. I mean, I can say this because as I watched his presentation unfold in real time, everything he put up there, I went, I know this. This isn't true. I know this. This isn't true. This isn't true. This isn't true. I knew everything he was saying. I was familiar with all of it, and none of it was true. And, if, you know, and all I can say is that if I knew this, the people in the U.S. government knew this too. They knew that they were selling a lie. Colin Powell knew he was selling a lie. So I don't have any sympathy for people that say, oh, dear, Colin Powell's a poor guy who got used by the CIA. No. Colin Powell didn't get used. Colin Powell played the game. He was a key player in the game of misinforming and disinforming the American public and the world in order to justify a war that the Bush administration had already decided was going to be waged even before Powell made his presentation before the United Nations.
Would you say that he was coaxed to do this by Cheney rather than Bush?
Well, first of all, Colin Powell isn't going to be coaxed to do anything by Dick Cheney. Colin Powell is a man. I mean, he's not a boy. He's not a teenager. He's not a simp. Right. He's not in any of these things. So he doesn't sit in his office cowering while Dick Cheney walks in and coaches him. Colin Powell would tell Dick Cheney to turn the hell around and get out of my office before he allowed himself to be coached by Dick Cheney, of all people. I mean, no, that wasn't going to happen. Colin Powell had received a phone call from James Baker and had spoken with Brent Scowcroft. Now, these are two people who are very close in the orbit of Papa Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, for whom Colin Powell owed everything. His entire career is owed. His entire career as a senior government official is owed to Papa Bush. And basically, Colin Powell was picked to be Secretary of State, not by George W. Bush, but by Papa Bush, because Powell's job was to help mentor this boy president, this bad apple who suddenly got promoted to the most powerful position in the world. But Colin Powell was brought in to basically coach this guy, to be there, to mentor him, to advise him, to help him from making big mistakes. Powell had an option, and Powell has talked about this. He said, I could have resigned. I knew that this was wrong. I knew we were making a case for war that wasn't, that wasn't sustained in fact. And, I could have resigned, but then if I had done that, I would have betrayed George Herbert Walker Bush. And he couldn't do that. So, it's not that Dick Cheney coached him. It's not that anybody coached him. But Powell was reminded by James Baker and Brent Scowcroft that, you got to be loyal to the family. And when push came to shove, Colin Powell chose loyalty to the Bush family over service to the country. He betrayed the United States of America. He betrayed the American people. He betrayed himself. He betrayed everything he claimed to have stood for to fulfill his obligations to the Bush family.
So when he spoke before the UN, he knew that it was not true. And he must have realized at that point his credibility would have been damaged. If Bush wanted Powell to say this, Bush had to be aware that Powell's stature would be diminished, right?
Look, when you serve a family, the priority is the family, not you. So, yeah, no, he was a sacrificial lamb. They were at a critical point where the war had to be sold to the American public, sold to the world. They needed a credible face to go before the world and sell this this pack of lies. Powell was a round of ammunition to be expended at that point. Once you shoot a bullet, it's gone. Powell, you don't get to bring the bullet back and put it on the mantle and say, hey, good bullet. It's gone. Powell is a piece of ammunition. He got shot that day, and that's it. He was done. His utility was over. He was disgraced forever from that point on. It was an embarrassment to him, an embarrassment to the nation, but it didn't matter because George W. Bush got his war. And that's all Powell was supposed to be doing that day is sell a war. He sold it, very well.
So Bush, number one, H.W. Bush, he was head of the CIA before he became president. So he knew full well that this whole thing that he was perpetrating was a lie. Am I correct?
Well, first of all, George Herbert Walker Bush was not the president of the United States at the time. His son was. And George Herbert Walker Bush's goal wasn't to perpetrate a lie. It was to support his son. That basically his son had made a policy decision based upon information that George Herbert Walker Bush was not privy to. He didn't sit in the office, neither did James Baker, neither did Brent Scowcroft. In fact, Brent Scowcroft wrote an op-ed arguing against the war, in the fall of 2002. And Papa Bush was not thrilled with the idea of going to war based upon incomplete information. But when it became clear that his son has made a decision as the president of the United States, Papa Bush said we have to support the son. And he did so not knowing what the intelligence was. Nobody briefed George Herbert Walker Bush on the intelligence. But they did tell Powell, who said, I'm disturbed by this. They said, the James Baker and Brent Scowcroft basically said, you got to salute smartly and support the family.
So George W. Bush did not make this decision by himself. There were other people involved. Who were the other people?
Well, I mean, he was, when you say the decision to go to war with Iraq,
yep.
He was predisposed towards that. He's all but admitted that, first of all, the Iraq situation was a stain on his father's reputation for a number of things. Papa Bush was supposed to have defeated Saddam back in the Gulf War, and Saddam continued to survive. And Saddam's continued survival was a thumb in the nose of the Bush family legacy. Not only that, there was the alleged assassination attempt against Papa Bush. In 1993, when he left, after he was out of office, he was supposed to visit Kuwait, and there was supposedly an assassination attempt by Iraq, and the Clinton administration used this as an excuse to attack Iraq with cruise missiles. It turns out there was no assassination attempt. It was a setup by the Kuwaiti government to force the Clinton administration into continuing hostilities against Iraq at a time when the Clinton administration was talking about the potential of lifting economic sanctions and normalizing relations. But George W. Bush said, this man, being Saddam, tried to kill my papa. So this was personal for him. He was always inclined towards finishing the job in Iraq, but he had no justification. 9/11 came along. And people like Paul Wolfowitz, who was an assistant or I think undersecretary of defense, Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney were all, basically looking to divert, to get us engaged in a global war on terrorism by, going into Afghanistan, but then immediately transitioning to Iraq and take out Saddam, even though Iraq had nothing to do with 9/11. But Bush was inclined to support this because he had this prejudice, this inherent prejudice against Saddam Hussein. So, you know, basically you had a, you know, a cabal of like-minded individuals who were seeking to take advantage of 9/11 to impose a larger policy priority on the American people, one of regional transformation to get rid of inconvenient regimes in the Middle East, starting with Iraq, but then going on to Iran. There was a plan to go into Iran, a plan to go into Syria, and to remove all of these governments that were inconvenient to the United States.
So the project for PMAC, Project for New American,
Century.
I forgot the list, Century. They were all former Cold Warriors, right? And they were looking for a new place to hang their hat. Am I correct?
Well, they were all former Cold Warriors. I mean, look, if you're in government in the 1990s, you were a former Cold Warrior because the Cold War ended in 1991. So, you know, it's I think more important than there being former Cold Warriors was that they were all very pro-Israel. And the PNAC agenda, the Project for New American Century agenda, was derived from an Israeli policy that calling for regional transformation, because the Israelis believed that a strong Saddam, a strong Iran, a strong Syria all posed an existential threat to Israel, and that the best way to secure Israel's long-term survival would be to get rid of the regimes and transform those nations into, you know, democratic entities that would peacefully coexist with Israel. So PNAC agenda, not so much Cold War as post-Cold War establishment of regional hegemony by the United States on the Middle East on behalf of Israel.
So after the UN speech, what happened to Colin Powell? His stature was diminished, right? What happened to him?
Well, his stature after the speech, actually, you know, he people were praising him, saying, "Oh, he made the case for war. Colin Powell was the only person that could do this." Prior to the speech, you know, the Bush administration was stumbling. Nobody was buying into this, but after it, the whole world rallied behind it. Indeed, you know, the people did say, "Well, Colin Powell made a case, a compelling case." These were ignorant people; they didn't know anything about weapons of mass destruction and the underlying intelligence. But he made the case, and then we invaded. The problem was, you know, we went in March and April, and all these weapons that Colin Powell said existed turned out not to. I mean, it was immediately refutable. The mobile biological weapons labs turned out to be, you know, the fabrication of a CIA, an Iraqi defector named Curveball, working for the CIA, that everybody knew was lying. And yet that information, the lie, found its way into Colin Powell's presentation. You know, it turns out, you know, the tapes he played of Iraqis talking, the UN inspectors knew that the Iraqis weren't talking about their hiding weapons. The Iraqis were talking about, you know, that the inspectors are going to an area that had been bombed extensively by the United States, and previously they had found unexploded chemical weapons because the U.S. blew up a warehouse full of chemical Gulf War, and these weapons were scattered everywhere. And the Iraqis said, "Hey, let's make sure we go through one more time to make sure that there's, you know, nothing, you know, thrown into a wadi or thrown under a rock or a bush that the inspectors find it embarrasses us. It'd be better if we found it first so we could give it to the inspectors." That's what was happening. Colin Powell knew that, but he played the tape anyways to make it seem like the Iraqis were hiding something. You know, he knew that when the U.S. occupied, a military facility named Taji, there was a bunker that Colin Powell showed. He said, "This is where they're hiding chemical weapons, and there's this fire truck that's spraying it down. It's there for decontamination." Every inspector who had been to Iraq, including myself, has been there and said, "No, what they store in there are artillery fuses, which are very sensitive to dust. And that vehicle that's going around spraying is a water truck to spraying water over the ground around the bunker to keep the dust down so it doesn't impact. Everybody knew that, but Colin Powell lied about it. And bit by bit by bit, the totality of his presentation fell apart. And at that point in time, you know, his time was done. He, you know, he eventually left as Secretary of State, and you know, the Bush family took care of him. He got into the Carlyle Group. You know, got to make a bunch of speeches, make a lot of money, serve on boards, and get, you know, lucrative payments for being a board member. Became very wealthy, but his credibility, you know, the Colin Powell that could have been president of the United States was no more. You know, if he had ran in 1996 against Bill Clinton, he might have beaten him. If he had ran in 2000, he definitely would have been president. But Papa Bush and the Republicans had decided that it was George W.'s time, that Colin Powell needed to, you know, step aside. He would never get a chance to be president because after that presentation in 2003, his reputation was shot.
So the day of the speech, I'm sure you were watching TV that day. Was there a lot of criticism of Colin Powell that evening?
Very little. The vast majority of the media was fawning and falling over itself to praise Colin Powell's speech. I was actually in Japan at the time. I was meeting with the Japanese parliament trying to convince the Japanese not to support an American-led war against Iraq. And I was supposed to give a presentation at the Foreign Correspondents Association to talk about Iraq. And we agreed to delay it so I could watch Colin Powell's presentation. So my presentation was actually a critique of Colin Powell's speech. And one reporter did cover it, and it was the only story out there that was critical of Colin Powell's speech. And it basically said that everything Colin Powell said was a lie. But other than that, the media pretty much just bought into everything he said and sang high praises to him.
So when that evening, Powell had to be pretty proud of himself for the media to fawn all over him, right?
Well, I mean, I think I think Colin Powell understood what he had done and understood the price that was going to be paid. I don't think Colin Powell walked away feeling good about that speech because he knew that everything he said was a lie. And he knew he was just fooling people, and he knew that there would ultimately be an account. You know, the guy to talk to is Lawrence Wilkerson. He was Colin Powell's chief of staff at the time. And I think Wilkerson, talks about, just how uneasy Powell was about this whole experience. I don't think there was any time that Powell didn't walk out of Security Council high-fiving people, doing a little jig, and then running off to the bar to get drunk in celebration. I think he slunk away because he knew he'd lied. He knew he lied.
And ultimately, there were many people that died because of it. And Bush, number one, didn't really care that much, right?
Well, Papa Bush, I can't speak to what he cared about or not. I think his number one priority was supporting his son. That more than anything. And I would say that his son didn't care. I mean, I don't think his son lost too much sleep over the tens of thousands of Iraqis who lost their lives because of his illegal war of aggression. And I don't think he lost too much sleep over the thousands of Americans who lost their lives because, that's the price you pay. I mean, when you're a president with the track record of courage, and I'm saying this sarcastically, that George W. Bush had, he was an F-102 pilot in the Air National Guard. He could have, at the time he was flying, they were recruiting F-102 pilots to go fly combat missions in Vietnam. He could have easily volunteered to go to Vietnam and serve his country. Instead, he ran away to a different unit so he wouldn't have to deploy. The man's a coward. So cowards tend to hide behind the heroic actions of others. And therefore, when you have American service members in Iraq fighting and dying, when their bodies come home, you revere them as heroes. You say, these are heroes who sacrificed for the good of the nation, for the good of the world, you know, in the glory of my war. You know, when the reality is these were young Americans who died needlessly for, you know, an illegal war of aggression. You know, if George W. Bush had a, you know, had any integrity or, you know, had a modicum of humanity in his soul, you know, he would have resigned. He would have cried. He would have done something other than continuing to say that, you know, mission accomplished, this was a good war, et cetera. No, he's a man, he's a disgrace. And frankly speaking, Colin Powell is a disgrace because Colin Powell helped make this war a possibility. If you're going to call George W. Bush a war criminal, and I do, then Colin Powell is a war criminal. I mean, that's just a sad fact.
And George W. Bush is still walking around. He's still getting his pension. He's still treated as any other ex-president. Do you find that appalling?
I mean, yes and no. I mean, yes, you know, it's appalling. But no, I mean, every president walks around. We, you know, there, with the exception of Jimmy Carter, there's not a former president walking around who isn't a war criminal, who hasn't committed crimes against humanity, who under any other circumstance wouldn't be locked up in the Hague and subjected to international trials for these crimes. I mean, none of our presidents are good people. None of them are good people. They're all bad people. They've all done bad things. I think that's just the reality when you become, somebody who operates that level. I mean, Donald Trump, you hate the guy if you want to. He's the most honest president we've ever had in modern history. And when someone said, well, you know, Putin's a killer, Donald Trump said, we haven't done so many good things either. You know, we're not perfect. We do bad things. Trump knows. Trump knows what we do. Trump knows what he did. At least he's honest about it. You know, but, you know, Barack Obama receives the Nobel Peace Prize. Bill Clinton walks around as if he's some sort of grand peacemaker. You know, these guys are a disgrace. And George Walker Bush is a disgrace just like they are. These aren't good people. They don't carry out good policies. You know, and yet the United States of America continues to put them on a pedestal and treat them as if they're if they're the epitome of what everybody should aspire to.
Wow. And on that note, Scott, we have to close our show. So I always say this, but I really enjoy talking with you all the time. You've been listening to Scott Ritter. We've been talking about Colin Powell. I'm Cynthia Pooler. This is All Exits Closed. And if you like this show, like us on Facebook. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great day.
Thanks.